There's nothing you or I can do to bring them back now.
He has risen, baby girl.
Fuck!
Hey, everybody, and welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your one and only source for all things about movies that came after two other movies, and we've got as new a threequel as you could get. I'm going to put a big fat spoiler alert right at the top of this episode, because we're going to probably spoil everything about 2024's Deadpool and Wolverine, the third in the Deadpool trilogy and the Marvel Cinematic Universe's grand eulogy to its dear departed 20th Century Fox counterparts.
Or dearly cannibalized 20th Century Fox counterparts. I don't...
Well, I wanted to say it was like a eulogy to the X-Men movies, but it's not really.
No.
It's surprisingly X-Men light. It is definitely like a tip of the hat to you know the adequate, the forgettable, occasionally regrettable.
Yeah, it's sort of amazing. I mean, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but it's sort of amazing that the closing credits of the movie make me semi-nostalgic for a truly dogshit Elektra movie.
Oh my god, yeah. I don't think I've ever actually seen the Elektra movie. I think I just like Jennifer Garner,
yeah.
And it's fun that she's a good sport about these things. All right, so we'll wind it back. If you're familiar with the X-Men, you might be familiar with Deadpool. And Deadpool is, physically deformed, ultra-violent, psychotic, fourth-wall-breaking heart and soul of the Marvel Universe. And he is a product of Rob Liefeld and who's the other guy? Fabian...
Nessesia? There
yeah.
You go. Yeah.
Yeah, who's written tons of Deadpool stuff.
Yeah.
He wrote all of Cable and Deadpool, which is kind of what inspired Deadpool 2. And Deadpool is, he's for the longest time was kind of a not prominent character in Marvel Comics. He was this own weird little niche thing off to the edge of the X universe, which is complicated enough as it is. And we'll get more into the X-Men themselves when we talk in the next couple episodes about the X-Men threequels, because the X-Men are, on the best of days, unbelievably complicated.
Yes.
And anyone that's a fan of them has strong opinions about them, and maybe I'm just not enough of a fan because I don't have strong opinions
about
them.
I'm a big X-Men fan, and I don't know if I have strong opinions, but I certainly have a lot of thoughts, I guess.
I'll say this much. We're millennials, so we don't have this problem, but don't ever, if you find yourself in the presence of a Generation X X-Men fan, don't disparage Chris Claremont, because they'll kill you.
Yes, they will.
I was in a writer's room once, and I dared to say, I don't think Chris Claremont did a very good job on Exiles, and you would have thought I'd burned the American flag.
Well, he didn't do a very good job on Exiles, but we'll talk about Exiles, because I think it's pertinent to this movie. But so, Sam, how did you... We'll talk about X-Men and how we came to that franchise. How did you get into Deadpool?
You got me into Deadpool.
I got you into Deadpool? Really?
I didn't know much. I mean, I knew of Deadpool, but I didn't know about... You told me read Cable and Deadpool, and I read Cable and Deadpool. So yeah, you did this.
Well, that's fair. I mean, because I got into Deadpool through Cable and Deadpool because my friend Betsy Swardlick was like, hey, you should read Deadpool. He's like Wolverine without any morals, and he only speaks in pop culture references.
And he knows he's in a comic book.
And he knows he's in a comic book. And so she handed me the first trade or the first arc of Cable and Deadpool, and then I was a fan of the character from there.
Yeah, no, it was... I think you then paid it forward to me, and we've been Deadpool fans ever since. And Deadpool... Cable and Deadpool came out in the mid-2000s, and Cable is the quintessential, like, big, beefy, stoic, stentorian descendant of Cyclops that is... And he plays really well off of Deadpool, who's crazy, in the same sense that, you know, Wolverine does as well.
Right. Yeah, and Cable and Deadpool came out in, like, 2003, 2004, and I think it's notable because in one of the first issues of that of the first arc of Cable and Deadpool, Deadpool says that he's the cross between Ryan Reynolds and a Sharpay, and that I think that is how it eventually led to Ryan Reynolds himself, and eventually led to Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yes, this is actually technically
fourth appearance of Deadpool, anyway.
Because I think they establish in Deadpool and Wolverine, all the X-Men movies are in the same universe as the Deadpool movies, so we actually, we have to stop now. No, we'll touch on X-Men Origins Wolverine because it touches back. No, so Deadpool is like, he's a very niche character, but he's got a very passionate fan base, and there is no greater fan of the character than Ryan Reynolds.
Right.
And Ryan Reynolds, I would say, you know, alongside Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, maybe Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, is like the perfect marriage of character and casting.
Yeah.
Cause he loves the character so much. You could so easily make this character like scrape away all the sort of heart and nuance to the character that makes it him more than just like a snarky edgelord sort of, I don't want to single out Mark Millar, but a Mark Millar
right.
type character
yeah.
or like a kick ass type character. But, he's, you know, I think Ryan Reynolds he championed getting these movies made for probably 10 years.
Yeah, so 2009, X-Men Origins Wolverine comes out. Nobody likes it. Even Ryan Reynolds doesn't like it because they have a version of Deadpool. Well, they have a version of Deadpool
yeah.
that works at the beginning, and then at the end, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, you see Wade Wilson before he, you know, becomes fully, you know, mutilated and is Deadpool, and it's like, oh man, I was so pumped for that movie because it was going to be just a Weapon X movie.
Right.
And it's so, it's hilariously bad.
Well, because it
looks terrible. So dumb.
And the script, like, it starts out as, oh, okay, we're going to do a Weapon X movie. And then it changes to, like, Wolverine's Lumberjack Adventure. And then it switches back to a Weapon X movie. And then it switches entirely to be an X-Men Origins movie. And you're like,
yeah.
Why is Cyclops in this? What is happening?
It's also the worst Weapon X lineup you could ever ask for. You've got Wolverine. You've got a Deadpool who's not remotely like Deadpool. And then it's like a fucking Mariadoc Brandy Buck who can control light bulbs. You've got Blob, but he's not Blob yet. You've got Will I Am, and you've got the guy who does like flippy shit with his guns. The X-Force in Deadpool 2 is cooler than them, and they get killed in their first scene.
Yes. I don't exactly know how it came about, but the studio eventually was like, well, we'll do a Deadpool movie in like 2012 or something like that.
I think it was a combination of things. I think it was the MCU was big, so Fox was like, we gotta build out the X-Men universe to compete,
yeah.
and we'll have them cross over with Fantastic Four because we're rebooting Fantastic Four. And I think that was the point where it was like, okay, we can fuck it, like, you can do your Deadpool movie, you know it's we won't sink a ton of money into it, it'll be R-rated, but the Marvel had really pushed the character
yeah.
in those like 10 years between like Cable and Deadpool, and when the Deadpool movie came out, for better or worse, there was that one period where like
he was
they
in
really
everything
were trying,
yeah.
They were trying desperately to make him a thing. He had like 5 comics at one point,
yeah.
and that's too much Deadpool. So they scaled it back, but they had like a nice simmer going. And that, I think, was... And then there was that famous test footage that was done.
Well, right, because...
That leaked out.
Because this... The first Deadpool movie was, I think, written in, like, 2012 or 2011 or something. Maybe even earlier. Maybe 2010.
Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick's draft. The one that... They'd just come off of Zombieland.
Right.
And they wrote on Deadpool and Wolverine as well. And Deadpool 2.
Right. So they wrote a script that everyone liked, but Fox just didn't want a green light. and they had a director attached. They had Tim Miller, who was a special effects guy, and he did this test footage that then was leaked to the press. And I think Ryan Reynolds has admitted that it was him at this point.
He's admitted that he didn't stop it from happening, at the very least.
And, of course, the internet loved this test footage, and that became the opening of the eventual Deadpool movie in 2016, 7 years after X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Fuck, we're old.
Mm-hmm.
But... it's like, it's, you know, it's not a perfect movie, but the things it gets Deadpool right. Like, right down, the costume is the best on-screen movie costume of a superhero ever.
And not only that, but it also gets, like, sort of, like, Colossus, like, his costume correct, too. It's like one of the, like, it's, like, so funny that the Deadpool movies are like, yeah, we're just gonna go with the X-Men costumes, who cares?
It's because the other movie, the X-Men movies with Colossus could not be bothered to put any effort into Colossus. Like, if he's gonna have more than one scene, it was like, I remember X-Men 3, they would not pop for him to be CG, so in most scenes where he's in a wide, he's just wearing, like, a bodysuit.
Right.
And it's just, if you look at close-ups, it's terrible. Yeah. X-Men The Last Stand, we're gonna have words about that movie.
A lot of thoughts, yeah.
Basically, that's the movie that began the, like, sinking into oblivion of the X-Men franchise that they've been trying to crawl out of ever since.
Pretty much. Right, so then, no one expected was that the first Deadpool movie was an enormous hit. Just, it connected with everyone.
Because fucking shock of shocks, it was something different. It's the same reason Guardians of the Galaxy hit. Right. It's like people want something that's different and fun. That's why the movies that are hitting right now at the box office, they're either different or they're fun.
Yeah.
Like, Twisters isn't different, but it's fun. Yeah. You know, Deadpool and Wolverine is fun.
Yeah. No, exactly. And it you know, it did really well. And it actually, you know, Ryan Reynolds had been steadily working for a long time, but this really catapulted him to, like, an actual A-list star.
Well, this is the franchise that, the superhero franchise that worked for him. He's a DC double dipper, lest we not forget.
Yes, he tried his hand at Green Lantern, and, yeah, it was...
Well, he's quite up front with that movie's failings. Yeah. speaking of... That's when a character shouldn't be CG and should have a practical costume.
And then the sequel came out in 2017, or was it 2018?
It was 2018.
Okay. Yeah, and that had Cable and sort of some of the X-Force characters popped up. But then that same year, Disney swallowed Fox, and
yeah,
so Fox has been trying and hinting at putting the X-Men characters and Deadpool into the MCU, which brings us to this movie now.
Yes, well, and then at the same time, a year after Deadpool 2, Avengers Endgame. Right. Brings an end to what we'll call Marvel's real hot streak.
Yeah.
And they've been in a bit of an identity crisis ever since. This is coming out after Comic-Con, where they've announced that Iron Man is bad now, and he's Dr. Doom.
Well, or at least Dr. Doom is now played by Robert Downey Jr. It's very unclear.
Which is akin to when they rumored Michael Keaton to be playing the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Yeah. It's
like... I'm not gonna pass judgment. Just, I will keep an open mind, but it's just like,
it does feel like a snake eating its own tail type
Christoph
of thing.
Waltz was right there, people. He hasn't even been in one of these
or
yet.
Yeah, recast Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh god, Mads Mikkelsen would be so good.
I don't know. There's lots of
recast Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah. Stellan Skarsgård or you know, Alexander Skarsgård too. Why not? Bill Skarsgård.
No, anyway, so in the interim, you've established the Marvel has been doing the multiverse thing. So we've had, let's get all the Spider-Men together, and let's see John Krasinski as Reed Richards, and let's get a version of Anson Mount as Black Bolt back, which I love. And then, so finally, it's like, okay, is there going to be a Deadpool 3? It's a Disney property now. Are they going to do, like, a rated R Deadpool? Are they going to let that happen? And yeah.
They did.
Oh, and one other important thing in also Logan's dead.
Right.
Wolverine died in a very well-made movie called Logan that people thought was a very fitting end to the character. But, you know, if you know comics, you know, no one stays dead except Uncle Ben. So they were like, okay, Deadpool and Wolverine are going to have a team up movie.
Yeah. And I think this movie is a lot of fun. I think there are a lot of people who seem to have problems with it, and I don't discount their problems per se, but I think this movie is just like a lot of fun from start to finish.
It's a lot of fun. It has a lot of heart. It's incredibly respectful of the characters. It may be too meta for some people. It is literally a movie where they're saying that a franchise will die without Wolverine in it. That's all it's saying. It's like the X-Men movies, they killed Logan and there was nothing left and it deteriorated into oblivion. But I don't know what people expected. I've stayed away from any online discourse about it, so I know that there's some division, but like, it was a fucking big hit.
Yeah.
And most people I know that saw it liked it. You know, it's not perfect, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I went in, because when I went to see it, the pre-reviews had just come out, and it seemed like it was just going to be nothing but wall-to-wall references and cameos, which can be fun, but I went in...
That's fun, but it's been fucking done already in the MCU at this point.
Well, right, and I sort of went in with, like, rock-bottom expectations, and they were so exceeded because it was like, no, there's, like, an actual story here, and, you know, there are, like... You know, the stakes are very light and it's very thin, but there's like a story here. There's an emotional through line here. And I don't know. I just had just a ball with this. And like the cameos, the big ones, are like actually part of the story. They're integrated into the story. I think they could have been integrated a little better, but they're part of the movie. They're not there to like... say the thing and then leave, you know?
No, and it's in the movie makes no bones about this is a movie for people that have seen two other Deadpools and probably six or seven other X-Men movies and know the fucking Marvel Universe, both the MCU and otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, if this is your entry into superhero movies, it's going to be disappointing and confusing.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it feels very inside baseball when, you know, Channing Tatum shows up dressed as Gambit and speaking in an incomprehensible accent and sort of being like, what is happening here?
That was the one where I was just like, oh man, all right. My theory with that one is that was the one someone said as a joke after Nick Cage was like, I'm unavailable to play Ghost Rider. It's like, I'm doing long legs.
I can't, because
I was the whole time I was thinking, where's Nicolas Cage?
I know, right? You want him in the void with those guys.
Actually, you know the one I really wanted is when he's going through the montage of all the different universes to find Logan, and it's Logan versus the Hulk. I wanted him to turn around and have it be Eric Bana Hulk.
That would have been awesome.
Because, like, no love for Ang Lee's Hulk.
Yeah, that one. Well, it's kind of the only... Everything is, like... Fox oriented, you know, there's Elektra and Human Torch shows up, and then Blade is there, and you're like, well, he was in New Line, what's going on with this? But
it's Blade,
right?
There's only one Blade.
There is only one Blade. That's speaking of superhero casting, Wesley Snipes as Blade. You're not gonna do better than him, I don't think.
You'd have to. The problem is, if you're gonna do Blade, like, again, you have to be bold enough to go like back to like 70s,
right?
Like beige jacket and bandolier of wooden stakes, like 70s like blaxploitation Blade. You've got to go all the way back to that, because you can't just put him in Wesley Snipes' outfit and hope for it to work. No disrespect to Mahershala Ali, he's awesome,
right?
But it's, you know, if they get that movie off the ground, they've got to really forge their own identity with that.
No,
I think that's also, that might be a character that's better in like a team movie. If they made a Sons of Midnight movie,
right,
or a a monsters movie of some sort.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. And one thing that actually I never thought I would say going into this is I want a, you know, Gambit, Elektra, Blade movie where they're tooling around this, either the multiverse in general or tooling around the void, the post-apocalyptic, you know, wasteland where franchises go to die.
I mean, I'm always down for that. I'm a mark. I've been I grew up with all these mediocre superhero movies. I'm always pumped to see like Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. Yeah. I'd completely forgotten in the moment that Chris Evans had been Johnny Storm. So when he flips flame on, I was just like, oh, those movies suck.
Yeah, it is sort of, it just is like, oh yeah, I remember, I loved the, I didn't love these movies, I loved hating these movies.
It's like, but it's like there's a fond, I think there's a nostalgic fondness for them in the same way we have for the Star Wars prequels because they are from a simpler time.
Right. Yeah.
Because like, if you think about this movie compared to every other MCU movie that's come out, it's pretty small scale. The final fight sequence is in a practical set alley.
Yeah.
Like a street. Yeah. Like it's set on like the Warner Brothers lot or something. It's pretty straightforward. And compare that to like the end of Guardians of the Galaxy or Thor Love and Thunder.
Or Endgame huge, even, yeah.
Or yeah, Endgame or Quantumania. Yeah. You know, it's like these all the Deadpool movies and most of the X-Men movies until the MCU came along were pretty small scale. Like X2 is still like my favorite X-Men movie, and it is literally just hallway sets.
Yeah
it's so simple. And I think you, the bigger your, like Endgame's an exception because Endgame is like, that's the reward for this is that splash page you've been building up to for, you know, 18 issues,
right? Yeah.
But I think this is a movie that's just like, yeah, it's a sweet farewell to a bygone era where superhero movies were still like, we weren't sure what they were, and Marvel wasn't some sort of massive singular entity. They would farm their properties out to other studios, and some of them would work well, and some of them would not. Most of them not, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Like, we love Blade, but we've talked about Blade Trinity. Yeah. You know, that movie's a mess. Yeah. Like, they'd be like, well, we'll give Hulk to the Crouching Tiger guy and see what happens. We'll give Daredevil over here, and we'll have Ghost Rider over here.
Yeah.
We'll have Namor stuck in development hell at Universal forever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and on some level, I mean, when you're thinking about this, like, the bad guy, Matthew McFadden, is like, he's basically a studio executive. Your villain is a studio executive being like, no, 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 we have to have everything as a one-size-fits-all peg in, you know, into this tapestry we're building. And it's like, I found it actually kind of poignant when Elektra says this, we're going to fight for an ending. You know, it's like, we never got our ending. And it's like, yeah, this is like, yeah, there's one way to look at this movie where it is a, you know, basically a corporate portfolio for Disney, right? Where it's like, these are all the characters we have. But I did find this sort of like, there's this poignancy to these characters being like, well, we want to exist. We want our stories to be told, and we want our stories to be good. And I couldn't help but think of like Batgirl, you know, being just sort of like tax right off into the void, you know? And it's like, there was something, I don't know, that really spoke to me. Again, I think if that doesn't speak to you, you will just sort of look at it and be like, well, this is all just sort of corporate nonsense.
But, yeah, you know. I don't get this. This is clearly some reference I don't understand. But here's the dirty little secret that people don't always want to admit. The reason something is long-running IP is because it resonated with people. And things don't last just because a studio says so.
Right.
Like, we've seen properties that studios have been trying to bring back over and over and over, and they keep failing, like Terminator. But the reason they keep doing that is because we keep caring about Terminator. It keeps having an impact. You know, it's the same thing with, they're never going to stop making stuff with Wolverine in them, whether or not it's Hugh Jackman or, you know, they're never going to, there's always going to be another Spider-Man coming along because he's a corporate entity, but he's also like a massive piece of pop culture.
Right.
And he has an influence on other artists and writers, but also on fans.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely. And I think
there's someone out there whose favorite superhero movie is, unironically, Elektra.
That's how I ended up actually seeing Elektra, is one of my friends was like, I love Jennifer Garner and I love this movie, and I ended up seeing it. I don't remember a thing about it, but he was very passionate about it.
I don't think I've seen it. I don't care. It's not nothing against Jennifer Garner. I don't care about Elektra.
No, I mean, and all I remember, I think I saw the director's cut. So there was like she has like a dream with Ben Affleck. That is literally all I remember, is that Ben Affleck shows up and is like, I want you to come back. Or I don't know. I don't remember what the fuck he says. But it's
good. Her good buddy, Matt Murdock, might stop by to wish her luck.
Exactly. But that like gets into like the hand and all that, all the stuff. I don't remember it.
Terrence stamps in it as Stick.
Is he Stick?
Isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I think I saw the trailer, but I was just like, it was a January movie. And it was much easier to just sit on the couch in the, you know, student room and watch Die Hard 2 for the umpteenth time.
Or the director's cut of Daredevil, too.
No one wanted to watch that with me. I was a Daredevil defender.
I was
and,
too.
And I still didn't see Elektra. I remember the Daredevil director's cut, which was, you know, still not a perfect movie, but gave you a better sense of what they were like going for with it. Had the one with Coolio, the whole subplot with Coolio.
I think that, I mean, I've seen the theatrical cut more than I've seen the director's cut, but I think that Daredevil movie is a lot more fun than people give credit to.
It's not great, but people just like to dump on Affleck for
Yeah.
And if anyone's allowed to, it's Jennifer Garner. But
no. But I think that movie in particular, it was one of those like, well, here, Spider-Man was a hit. Let's see what happens with this one, you know?
Yeah, and it was, the problem was so many of them were being done by people that I think just didn't, you know, have the passion for the material that Sam Raimi did for Spider-Man. That's why, everything felt a little watered down. Like, Fantastic Four, they didn't really know what to do with, and Ghost Rider... Ghost Rider should have been fucking awesome.
And a lot of these, I think, had like a fair amount of studio interference.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, I know that Mark Steven Johnson, the guy who did Daredevil, was like an enormous Daredevil fan. And I think probably what happened is the studio was like, I don't know, make it sexier.
Famously, the execs at Fox like didn't like a lot of the superhero stuff, the comic book. Like they hated the Sentinels. They never wanted the Sentinels to be in an X-Men movie. And I think it took years and years and years for them to finally, you know, allow that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom Rothman, who ran Fox at the time, was very much very anti costumes, very anti the more comic booky aspects of these things. You know, I think that was why. I mean, a number of reasons. I don't think at that time we would have been prepared for proper X-Men costumes in 2000.
No.
I don't think they would have worked. But
I think you could have done something with like blue and yellow as opposed to the black leather. But you know, it works until it doesn't. And at that point, the two superheroes that had most recently worked were guys that wore black leather and latex. It was Batman and Blade, so go with what you know. The Matrix had
and
just
they were
come
going
to,
yeah they were
know.
Doing a matrix riff. And I mean, in the, you know, to not to give him too much credit, but Bryan Singer did have sort of like, we're doing this as like an indie sci-fi drama, is like that sort of the vibe of that first movie.
No, I mean, credit where credit's due.
Yeah,
Bryan Singer. God. you know, they did a lot with a little. You know, the first movie is, it's a canary in a coal mine, even more so than Blade, because Blade is kind of its own thing. And it was like, is this anything? Can we make this work? They're giving us very little resources, and we're going to rely on a good cast and a halfway decent script. And we're going to treat it with respect. It's not going to be Batman and Robin.
No, I mean, I think that's the thing that first X-Men movie does from the jump. It's like, we're going to do our opening scene at Auschwitz, and like, we're taking this shit seriously, folks.
And it's also that every character intro is done so well. Like the first time you see adult Charles Xavier and Magneto at the Capitol building, those two, fucking Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen,
right.
And they just are both so perfect for those parts.
Yeah.
You know, and then the intro of Wolverine.
Yeah, that's where I was going to.
Awesome.
Yeah, it really is.
Because it's like, all right, he's too tall, he's too good looking, it's fucking Hugh Jackman, he's like basically a super handsome James Bond looking guy.
Yeah.
But they intro him, he is just a drunk, mean Canadian who will kick your ass.
I think a lot of that movie has not held up particularly well, but like the stuff with McKellen, Stewart, and Jackman, like, you can tell why that movie became the hit that it did, and it's because of those three. You know, and they carry the series going forward in the movies that they're in.
And the characters where it doesn't work, they course corrected in X2. Like, Storm doesn't have that accent anymore.
Yeah.
We get that, like, oh, we can do more with Rebecca Romijn. Like, she understands the assignment. And, you know, the only person that was completely done dirty by all those movies is our boy James Marsden. You know?
Yeah.
But that's because no one knows what to do with Cyclops as a character. Because he's actually, like, a really interesting character in the comics, because he's the square. He's the leader. He's the preordained leader of the X-Men. He's, you know, got the most complicated girlfriend you could ever hope to have. He's constantly sparring with that short, ugly Canadian that shows up sporadically.
And keeps wanting to bang his girlfriend.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's just like, he's dorky. No one likes him. You'd have to, I think to make him work as a character, you'd have to completely excise Wolverine from the story.
The way that those movies... Have you watched X-Men 97 yet?
I have not.
So they make Cyclops pretty interesting there. They do a lot of fun stuff with him. And I think he's a hard character to do right, because you're right. He's the square. He's the leader. He has to make the hard choices. But I think what the problem... It's not so much a problem in X-Men and X2, because I think the good outweighs the bad. But I think once you get into X3 and some of the other movies... They don't make them ensemble movies. They just become sort of either the Wolverine show or, you know, the Wolverine Magneto Professor X show.
Charles, Eric, and Jennifer Lawrence Mystique show.
Yeah, so X2 gets the X2 and Days of Future Past gets the closest to being like, these movies need to function and be structured like Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like the ensemble is more important than any one character. I mean, you have like the leads, you have your Kirks or your Captain Picards, but everyone else has like things to do. And that what happens in a lot of the X-Men movies is that people are just sort of standing around doing nothing by the time you get to the end.
X-Men works a lot better in a episodic form.
Yeah,
it's always worked better. Yeah. It's in the Marvel Comics universe, X-Men are walled off, not completely, but they are definitely their own area of the Marvel universe. It's like you've got like Spider-Man and some of the other like street level heroes. You've got the Avengers, you got space stuff, and you've got the X-Men.
Yeah.
And they only meet up on very special occasions.
And they, but they work more, they function more, even more so than the other guys, like just a big soap opera.
Yeah.
It's all just, you know, about character dynamics. And like some of the best issues that everyone remembers are when like they go to like the beach and have a barbecue. Like,
it's and the movies do this as well. And again, I don't want to give Bryan Singer too much credit, but it is like he also understood mutation is an allegory for something.
Right.
It's an allegory for civil rights. It's an allegory for gay rights. And it's these people at a school where they're safe, but they're going to always be persecuted, and they're always going to be dealing with, you know, infighting, between different factions of mutants and humans trying to kill them. And they're superhero movies on one level, but there are a lot of layers to it as well.
Yeah.
And maybe we're wasting our time talking about it because not much of that's going on in Deadpool and Wolverine.
No,
it has layers in a different way, and it does some really wonderful characterization stuff. It's a story about a character who wants to matter.
Right. I mean, and you know,
which
the
is
way
kind
I...
of what Deadpool's hook is a lot of the time.
Yeah,
he doesn't fit in on the Avengers or the X-Men. He's this weird, insane person that no one can stand, but he wants to be a hero and do the right thing.
Yeah, I always sort of think about him the way that Randall explains himself in Clerks 2. He's like, I'm the guy who talks about Star Wars and calls everyone stupid all the time.
You know who he is? He's Tuco from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like, he's not evil, but he can't help. He's got a moral compass. He just doesn't always use it.
Yeah. Morally flexible, I think, is his words, right? But I do like the way that this movie kind of plays him as he has like sort of this high at the end of Deadpool 2, and then he hits like a depression, like, and he can't like sort of figure it out. And I mean, the movie doesn't explore it a lot, but it is sort of like about a guy trying to get out of a depressive funk, you know? And how does he do that? He like tries to find his like smelly cranky buddy.
Well, he wants to save his universe.
Yeah.
And the only way to do that is to find someone else who doesn't want to be a hero anymore.
Yeah, and so it starts to become this like road buddy, you know, a buddy action comedy for a hot second.
Which weirdly you rarely get with superhero movies.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be very easy to do that, and like you'd think more would play with that. But
I mean, the biggest, who's the other good cop bad cop duo in comics is Batman and Superman, and neither of them are funny enough. You know, it's like,
that's true.
It's like we always for whatever reason, Batman and Superman was Batman versus Superman, but Deadpool got the ampersand with Wolverine because they can work their shit out. They do fight, but it makes a lot more sense that they would fight than Batman and Superman.
Well, because they also, I mean, neither of them can kill the other, so it's sort of like they know that like a lot of it is just they're gonna just pound on each other and nothing's gonna come of it.
Yeah, it's just to get your sillies out.
Yeah. I do really like Jackman's monologue to Wade, where he just lays out all of Deadpool's insecurities. It's such a wonderfully acted moment, and the way Reynolds plays it is like he gets quiet, like for the first time, you know, in the whole movie. He just doesn't say anything. He goes, "I'm gonna fight you now." Like, it's like all of his insecurities have just been like laid bare by like the guy he idolized. You know?
Yeah, I mean, these two guys, like they so get like not in, if not the comic book version of the character, they get this version of these characters. Hugh Jackman understands who this guy is inside and out. Now it's, I mean, I don't want to wedge Hugh Jackman into the MCU proper if and when they do the X-Men, but it's gonna be so hard to replace him.
Yeah, like, I mean, and you know, I think you when you're watching the I watched all the X-Men movies leading up to this. It's funny, you can tell that there were moments where the studio was like, okay, we're going to replace Jackman now. And then they like backed off at like the last second. There's so many moments watching those movies where you're like, oh yeah, this was meant, Wolverine here was meant to be played by somebody else.
Well, it's they never could get it to work without him.
Yeah.
Like, every movie that he's not a major part of kind of fell on its face, except maybe First Class.
Yeah.
And even then, like, there's no one in that movie where you're like, oh, this is the new face of this franchise.
Right. I mean, I think First Class is one of those movies where it's starting to get to the idea, oh, this is an ensemble. It's lumpy in the way that it gets there. But I think that was what they were trying to do. It's like, this is supposed to feel like an old school Star Trek, you know, episode.
X-Men First Class, I know a lot of people love it. And I'm like, I think what people love about it is just vibes. It's it's coming off of some truly disastrous X-Men movies, but it's like, it's one of those ones where I'm just like, I think I'm in the minority on it, but.
Well, we'll when we get to X3 Apocalypse and Logan, we'll talk about
it's also just and all of those, they failed to live up to the promise of like the things they set up with that movie. You know, right. I mean, I like Days of Future Past, but it's not following up all that well on First Class.
No, I mean, and yeah, I mean, I think after First Class, Days of Future Past feels like an exception because it's like its own. That feels like an Avengers movie in sort of the way it's put together, in that it's like, oh, we're going to have everybody in it, and everyone's going to interact, it's going to be fun, you know?
Well, that one's like a goodbye to the OG. Right. X-Men crew, and right. It's setting up the new ones, but then they fucking fail to do that.
Because we'll get to it when we talk X-Men no. Apocalypse.
But, I think my problem with First Class is also it's doing the thing that it's the best example of this maybe, but it's doing the X-Men Last Stand, Dark Knight Rises thing where it's like we're gonna cram three different storylines, and like that should have been a trilogy of movies.
Yeah,
because if you really let those, it's not the characterizations that are bad and the acting isn't bad, the acting is fantastic, but it's like the story needed to breathe a lot more.
Yeah, I mean it races through stuff. I mean,
like the third act of that movie is a speed run of the X-Men origin.
Yeah, no, I mean I don't disagree with you. I like First Class, I think, more than you do. But yeah, I think the biggest mistake those movies make is choosing a new decade for each movie, because
you didn't have a problem with the fact that none of them aged over 20 years.
Yeah, you get to like the 90s and you're like, aren't these people in their 50s?
Yeah, Dark Jesus. Phoenix is in the 90s and it's still just he should be Ian McKellen.
Right, they should be Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. What is happening? I saw like a YouTuber being like, white people don't age like this.
Was that Cosmonaut?
Yes, yeah. Yes,
I love Cosmonaut. No, I always like the interviews for Days of Future Past where they ask everyone at like Comic-Con, like, if you, all the actors, if you could be one X-Men, who could you be? And Ian McKellen's like, Michael Fassbender.
Oh, what a weird. And then, so. I tried, and I nearly gave myself a stroke trying to figure out how Deadpool and Wolverine connects to the X-Men timeline.
Granted, it deals with two
movies that have time travel in them, so.
Okay, I think I got it. I think I've got it. All right, I'm just spitballing here.
Okay.
All right, X-Men, X-Men 2, X-Men The Last Stand. You got the X-Men
Wolverine.
Origins Wolverine there, the Wolverine that leads into Days of Future Past. Days of Future Past resets and creates a two tangent timelines. So you see the OG crew get a happy ending, and then you see the new young X-Men going forward, and they go into Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix. Now let's assume that happy ending with the old crew, with Halle Berry and James Morrison and Hugh Jackman and all them. At some point, Patrick Stewart has his, like, psychic stroke and kills them all. And that leads into Logan.
Right,
so
okay.
That's the timeline with Deadpool, Logan, and Deadpool and Wolverine. So I guess it's just, like, the dystopian future of Logan is just the year 2024.
Or 2029, I think, is when Logan is set.
Right.
So... I mean, I get that, like, Deadpool traveled to the future to dig up Logan's corpse. I get that part, but
I don't know if Logan's dead in Deadpool's presence.
Right. I don't think he is, but I guess it's just sort of when an anchor being dies, I guess you can't use the the current timeline anchor being to...
I think it just means that the timeline starts deteriorating.
It's just like from the front to the back.
I mean, whatever. Look, I'm very forgiving of these things because the X-Men universe is complicated as hell on its best day. And you and I have sat here trying to figure out the Terminator timelines. Yeah. And, you know, this is like just... You know, this is what happens when... This is what happened before franchises were... meticulously curated by a corporate office. Your timelines aren't always going to make sense.
Yep. No, I mean, and you know, it's one of those things where you're like, how did Deadpool get into the sacred timeline in the first place to try and interview with the Avengers? And you're like, I don't know. He had the time thing.
Cable's time machine clearly had some ability to jump, because maybe in another timeline, Cable is Thanos because it's the same actor.
Well,
so,
and,
you know,
and,
he's got some Infinity Stones.
And to be fair, Deadpool also does travel to our world and killed Ryan Reynolds while he was reading the Green Lantern script.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's like
if fucking She-Hulk can kick her way out of the Disney Plus like menu and go talk to the writers, Deadpool can do what he wants.
Yeah.
I don't care about breaking the fourth wall.
No,
it happens in comics all the goddamn time. And if people think it's stupid, then that just means they're, you know, they have a lack of imagination or they didn't read the comics. I mean, if you know Deadpool, you know that's like part of his shtick. I think it was people got really bent out of shape about it with She-Hulk, but
right.
That's because
read She-Hulk.
No male millennial has ever read She-Hulk.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I don't know. I maybe it's just I'm a sucker for this kind of thing, but like Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool has never, like, I've never found him, like, too grating. But
no.
I know a lot of other people have, but
well,
Deadpool's
not for everyone.
Right.
The movies make no bones about the fact that he is a grating, irritating person that most people can't stand. I remember reading one of the comics once and he's fighting Domino, and Domino's like, the most dangerous thing about Deadpool is his mouth because he will not shut up, and you get distracted by him.
Yeah.
I honestly haven't, again, I'm not on the socials as much these days, so I haven't really encountered anyone that disliked it, and I go to the movies once every 9 months, so you know. But I thought it was a ton of fun. It was exactly what I wanted it to be. I didn't want Logan.
Yeah,
like it's not that. I just wanted something. I just wanted a fun Deadpool movie.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think this. I think this and Deadpool 2 are the closest that get to the vibe of Cable and Deadpool, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think...
No, giving him someone to play off of was so effective, and there's no one better for him to play off of in these movies than Wolverine.
Yeah. I think Deadpool... There are two things that I think Deadpool really needs to to function. It's having a straight man to play off of, and also a wider universe to comment on. I think that I like the first Deadpool movie, I think because of how surprising it was, but I think the movie runs out of steam because they don't have a big budget. The scope is so small. He can't like sort of comment on, oh my God, it's the Juggernaut, or oh my God, it's, you know, it's Blade, you know, if they
can't. When he's got more people to play off of, because he knows everything. You can't do Logan for Deadpool. It wouldn't work the same way. It's always going to be self-aware. It's always going to be self-referential. That's baked into the character. If you didn't do that, if you don't like that, Deadpool's not the character for you. And if you didn't do that, you'd be doing a disservice to Deadpool. Ryan Reynolds would never have done the character any other way.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, and, you know, there's something very... one of the funniest parts of Deadpool 2, I mean, aside from, like, when X-Force all dies, but the other the other part is when he does meet Juggernaut, and he's, like, so excited, and then, like... immediate that excitement turns to like fear when Juggernaut just rips him in half.
Yeah.
I think that's like everything about the character that I love, where he's like, oh my God, I get to fight Juggernaut. Oh no, he's ripping me in half.
Yeah, he's a tough character to, you know, walk the line, because he's very earnest in some parts, he's incredibly meta, and he's can be very irritating. Like, it he's he's Star-Lord and like and Spider-Man and Wolverine all wrapped up into one character, and it's really hard to do that. And it's a fucking miracle that they got the first one made, and they've made three of these by now. We also live in an age where people know all this inside baseball shit by virtue of just how we know about movies being made and developed. Right. It's like, you want to know who the fuck Jennifer Garner played in a Marvel movie, you just got to Google it, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think, you know, in between 2016 when the first Deadpool arrived, and there's now like a whole ecosystem telling people about failed comic book movies, or did you know that Channing Tatum wanted to be Gambit at one point in time? You know, like it's...
I mean, yeah, the fact is, I think more people than you'd guess immediately got why Channing Tatum was there as Gambit.
Yeah. I mean, in 2016, Ryan Reynolds, I think, shared this picture, but Fox did a full court, like, Comic-Con, like, here's our next slate of movies, and, you know, there's a picture with Ryan Reynolds and Jennifer Lawrence and Channing Tatum, and sort of it's like, this is our next, you know, this is our shared universe.
It was going to be they were going to have their Fantastic Four X-Men crossover.
Right, yeah. Was 2016 Fanforstic, or was that earlier?
No, that was like 2013 or 14. Okay. That had already... Right.
That had already come and gone and...
Well, more like flame out, am I right?
I never saw it.
I didn't...
I never saw the Chris Evans ones.
I saw them. They're Spider-Man without the sauce. Like, right. They don't have the mojo. They get a few things right here and there, like Chris Evans is well cast, Michael Chiklis is well cast, the Silver Surfer is Doug Jones in the sequel, right. But they completely fuck up Galactus. You know, it's they've got like inklings. You can see there's some corn in the shit, but it's like they don't do Doctor Doom right. You know, it's just kind of a mess. Yeah. And then the Fanforstic, or whatever the fuck they called it. It was just like, it's the Fantastic Four minus all the things that are distinct about the Fantastic Four. We're going to make it was like a Snyderverse Fantastic right. Four movie without even Snyder's panache behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like, I mean, it looked like from the trailers, it's like, oh, it's Chronicle, but the Fantastic Four.
And it was also one of those ones where they were like, we want to have a diverse cast, but we can only make the black guy the hothead, so somehow he's sister, and his sister is Kate Mara. So.
They do a shout out to that movie and at the end credits of Deadpool and Wolverine.
It counts, it happened. And someone out there loves it. Someone out there, that's their favorite superhero movie. That's the thing. It's like someone, the same way we get really stoked to see Alfred Molina as Dr. Octopus again, or you might get really excited to see Michael Keaton as Batman again. Someone not just like had a nostalgic chuckle. They were like, holy shit, it's Blade, my favorite guy.
I mean, I did. I mean, I was very happy to see him. I did, because I didn't think he was. That was not something I thought would happen.
No, I'm always happy to see Wesley Snipes.
But when he showed up, I was like, yes! And when he says some motherfuckers are still trying to ice skate uphill, I would think I was like one of the few, you and I were like the only people laughing.
Yeah, well, we were there. We're children of 1998, you know? We've been thinking about that line for 25 years now. But yeah, so we've now opened a Pandora's box of really kind of the best and the worst of the X-Men movies ahead of us. We're going to be doing three. I think next up we're going to talk about X-Men The Last Stand. And we'll probably pair that up with Apocalypse. Shall we do those two together?
I think that makes the most sense, because I think they have similar problems and similar issues, and I think they're worth talking about together.
Yeah, and then we will do we'll finish strong with Logan.
Yeah,
because you have your dissertation about how that completely disjointed trio of movies works as a trilogy, and I'm looking forward to that.
I don't know if I have a total dissertation, but I do have thoughts on that. So, especially having just watched all three. So,
how I look forward to how Will I Am and the big CGI samurai go with the.
Well, they don't, but.
Oh, the Wolverine is such a frustrating movie because it's like
it really is
because it's like there's just these moments where like you just kind of go no you were doing so well
yeah it's two thirds of a great movie and then it just like it shits the bed in the last act you're like why are you doing
why
this
are you fighting Shredder
why is there a mech why couldn't this just be a silver samurai is why does silver, it have to yeah. be a robot
I thought silver samurai was just a samurai who wore silver
it's like what is happening watching X-Men Origins Wolverine again was an experience I hadn't seen that since the theater
movie but, is ridiculous
oh my god it is so it's like someone set out to make like, what would happen if Canon made a Highlander movie? It's like, this is kind of what it would be.
What if Canon made a Wolverine movie?
Or Canon made a Wolverine movie.
With Chuck Norris as Wolverine.
It's just like it's so all over the place.
It is really like, that movie is like, how can we do everything wrong? It's like,
it really is.
And it's another one where it's like, the opening credits are so solid. You're like, yeah. Oh shit, is this movie gonna be good? No,
nope,
no, that's it. Nope. As soon as Deadpool is doing his spinny thing, where he
yeah, and he slices through the bullets, and you're just like, okay,
it's like I don't think that's Deadpool's thing.
I mean, but even so, like that opening stretch, you're like, okay, I could groove to a movie that's just this. This could be fun. And
like,
then...
you're on board basically until, like, through the opening credits, and then they're on that airplane, all of them, and you're like, okay, Kevin Durant's here, you know.
Yeah.
I'm having fun. I love Liev Schreiber. The plan lanes, and the mission begins, and the movie just dies. A death.
Yeah,
and it's
that's it.
And then it becomes, how many times do you get to drink when Hugh Jackman screams up into the heavens?
And it just, and then it just, it keeps resetting itself like every 5 minutes. It's like, no, we're kind of bored of this movie. Let's start another one. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah, well, that was during their, like, we're making these X-Men Origins movies.
Right.
And the other one that didn't get me, they got condensed down to the first act of First Class, was going to be the awesome, you know, young Magneto hunting Nazis movie that we all were denied. But, you know, there's maybe sometimes a boringness that comes with the sort of consistent okayness of the MCU, but you know what a ride these X-Men movies were. You know, from the highs yeah. and low lows. You know?
Yeah, you don't get quite a movie like X-Men Origins Wolverine out of the MCU.
No, you and don't get
for good or ill
big swings. Where they miss the ball and strike out. you get singles and bunts a lot now.
Yeah. I mean, that, like, you never get the big swing where the bat goes flying into the air and hits the batter on the head and knocks him out.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
It's just like, it's just...
And that's a shame on a certain level. I think, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, when the Marvel Cinematic Universe works really well, it's like, oh my god, this is such a well-oiled machine, especially like everything from Iron Man to Endgame, for sure. They've been kind of in an identity crisis ever since. But like, oh my god, I can't believe they pulled this off. But then there's a charm to like the DCEU, which has some hot, hot messes, or the X-Men movies, which have some great movies and have some dreadful movies, or like James Bond.
Yeah.
Like, think of James Bond's been around since the 60s, and he's had some incredible movies, and he's had some breathtakingly awful movies. But you know what? It's going strong still. And I think there's a problem that comes with when you want everything to be kind of consistent and the same and all woven together perfectly, you lose a little bit of the the charm that comes from taking chances, or even seeing what sticks.
You know, as bad as some of these Fox movies were, they're also, like we were saying, there's just more, like, people will take more chances with them.
Especially with X-Men. There was no Spider-Man yet, and Blade's a very different animal. They just know what didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, the only reference point anyone had was like, okay, how do we not be Batman and Robin?
Right. You know? Yeah.
Which is the most important superhero movie ever made, when you think about it. You know, right from the beginning, we've always talked about some of the most important threequels, like Season of the Witch, define their franchises in terms of what they will not be.
Right.
That's the superhero movie that defined what superhero movies will never be again.
It's true. I mean, like, even, yeah, that era from, I think we've talked about it, sort of,
'98 to 2007.
It ends with Spider-Man 3, yeah. Is really when it sort of finishes out, and you know, the Batman begins Dark Knight and Iron Man sort of start the new era.
Yeah.
But that era of superhero movies was sort of, well, let's throw shit at the wall. Let's make a Hellboy movie. Let's see what we can get through.
Really, they should have had everything from that era. Like, Hellboy should have showed up. Christian Bale in the first Batman Begins, when he couldn't turn his head, should show up. Yeah, Brandon Routh should have been there. You know,
just everybody.
Just everybody. Yeah. You know, they tried to get Nick Cage.
They must have, right?
They had a bulletin board, and you know they wanted to get him in there.
And yeah, I think he probably would have. He was probably busy.
I'm doing Long Legs. I look really scary.
He does. It's a scary movie. It scared me.
It scared you? I haven't seen it yet. But I do, Micah Monroe never lets me down, so.
She's really good in it. And Alicia Witt is in it, too, and she's really good, too. Great. Yeah.
Nice. And it's Ozzie Perkins, you know?
Yeah.
Anthony's son.
Yeah.
It's not a threequel. We can't talk about
it. No, we can't. We can't really talk about it.
Nope. Nope.
So, although I did like...
We'll be back next month for Venom 3.
Ooh.
Oh, God. I mean...
Wait, guys.
We might have to.
I think we'll have to.
God, those movies are so... Those movies are the last vestige of the mid-2000s.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Sony's, like, extended Spider-Man universe is the last one standing. It's like, what can we do that works? Madam Web and Morbius and the Venom movies could have come out in 2006 and fit right in.
No, I mean, I remember walking out of that first Venom movie and being like, yeah, that kind of felt like something that would have come out in 2002.
Oh, my God. There's... Stupid voice. Both is stupid voices.
Yeah, I mean, I there is some weird charm about the Venom movies that I really enjoy. So,
well, it's like if you subscribe to, like, Venom is a goofy character that you play goofy, they work like a charm.
Yeah.
If you want to do a serious Venom movie, which I still don't think they've ever done,
no,
you know, it's not gonna work. But I'm fine if this is what Venom's gonna be up to, it go in peace. I'd rather Tom Holland Spider-Man do something else.
Yeah.
All right, and we get Kraven the Hunter as well. Oh, yes. We're in the Kraven movie.
The movie that was pushed back for because it's too good.
Right? It's too good. It's Russell Crowe plays a superhero dad. That only ever works out great. He's Superman's dad, he's Hercules' dad, and now he's Kraven's dad.
I don't understand. I mean, I get it on like a IP level, but I do not understand the creative thinking behind these Spider-Man-less Spider-Man movies.
I mean,
I get them in Venom, because Venom's sort of like a character who works kind of without Spider-Man, but like all these other people.
Yeah, Venom has enough, like, has stood on his own in a weird, warped way. If Madame Web had been what it was marketed as, which is like a Spider-Women movie.
Yeah.
It, like, if it had actually been like Sydney Sweeney as Spider-Woman, all right, that could have worked. You know, if it's not that.
Yeah.
It's so far from that.
But
Kraven doesn't work.
No, not without Spider-Man. Like, no. Why are you doing this?
What is he hunting?
Not Spider-Man.
Like, all right, now we've gone far afield, but what Spider-Man villains would work in their own standalone movie?
Well, I mean, it depends. The tone would have to be something quite ridiculous, but you could do Stilt Man. You know.
Well, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, kind of, I'm always down for. The Shocker and Stilt Man.
You do sort of the also-rans as like a villain team.
You could do a horror movie take on the Lizard.
Yep.
But that's just, it's just a
werewolf. Right, that's either werewolf movie, or Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You don't, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone else needs Spider-Man.
Paul Giamatti's Rhino.
Just some weirdo in a mech suit running around.
Oh, thank God this didn't go to a third movie. I don't want to. I'm glad we got poor Andrew Garfield got closure.
Yeah, he got a bit of a part three in that part three.
I would say, bringing it back around to Deadpool and Wolverine, that and Spider-Man No Way Home both feel like they walk that line between being a movie in their own right and telling a story and having strong characters and still being this sort of meta multiverse love letter to some element of Marvel fandom.
I agree, and I think No Way Home does it a little better, but No Way Home also is not a comedy. Like, No Way Home is not that, you know.
Spider-Man's a less tricky character to pull
and
off.
And for you know, all intents and purposes, Deadpool and Wolverine is a comedy. It wants to be silly and funny and doesn't.
It's a buddy cop action movie.
It's not. No Way Home has like aspirations, and I think it pulls it off, but aspirations of drama. You know?
No. No Way Home, I mean, we talked about it. No Way Home is at its heart telling a real story about Peter Parker.
Exactly.
You know?
But
it's got plenty of comic book nonsense in it. You're allowed to do that in a movie about Spider-Man.
But the thing is, I do really appreciate that it's like, you know, Wesley Snipes and Jennifer Garner and Channing Tatum clearly showed up. It could have been they were, at least to my eyes, it looked like they were all on set together, you know, and it could have been like, oh, here they are. They were never to get in the same room together. But like, it did seem like everybody was on set together and ready to play. Like, you know, I wish that action sequence with all of them had been a little cleaner and less sort of like chaotic, but
yeah, I'd say this doesn't have quite the action juice of the first two. The second was David Leitch as well. And like, he's got that shit down pat. Like, Sean Levy is a solid director, but I feel like it didn't quite have that. The action sequences felt a little more choppy.
At least, like, the Deadpool and Wolverine fights are pretty, like, clean. And, like, the opening action sequence where he's killing the TVA guys is, like...
That one is really good. But that's also, like, so stylized.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's almost all... It's just bones and dancing.
That's true. But, and then, like, the one take where they're killing all the Deadpools, like that also felt, it's just the one scene where, you know, Wesley Snipes is kicking ass, Jennifer Garner's kicking ass, and it's like, I kind of wanted more of that, like, Avengers one-er thing, but, you know, whatever.
That also might have been like, we don't want to go to, like, fucking stage combat camp again. We're not doing this again.
That's true.
He's like, I'm old. She's got her, you know, yogurt empire. We're busy people.
Yeah. But there is a version of this that feels like it could have felt like a late stage Kevin Smith movie where it's like, oh, these people were never in the same room together, you know.
Or like The Hobbit, right? Where like Christopher Lee was in Europe and, you know, Hugo Weaving was in Australia and they're all green screened in. Have you ever seen that footage, by the way?
No, I have not.
Ian McKellen, because they filmed The Hobbit in 3D, they couldn't do the thing from The Lord of the Rings where it's like, oh, Ian McKellen's in the foreground and the dwarves and the Hobbit are in the background. No, he had to fucking sit in a green screen set with just faces on sticks.
My God.
And it's literally, he's doing all of this stuff and they're on a different set interacting live with him. And there's just a moment where Ian McKellen breaks down and is like, got his hands in his head in his hands. And is like, I can't act like this.
God.
And you feel so bad for him because you know he was probably so excited to like come back and be Gandalf again. And it's like, well, I think we've been, they're long movies, but we're gonna have to get to
We will. We will. I mean, it's those are the big. Those are biggies. You know.
Yeah. Well, one of them's a biggie. The other one's just long.
But I going back to these guys, like I said, and you know, one of the things I love the Exiles comic book where, and Spider-Verse is like this too, where it takes different people from different universes and puts them together. I just think that's so fun.
Yeah. Well, it's Sliders. Exactly. The What If animated series kind of does that as it goes on every season. And you know, I would totally watch an Exiles animated series.
I would 100%. And I was hoping that that's what the Loki show was going to be, was basically going to be Exiles, but wasn't that. I mean, it was fine, but it just wasn't that. But
it's unfortunately bogged down in setting up a supervillain. That's not going to be a thing now.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, that's also part of the problem.
No, I mean, which I'm fine with, because every time they've mentioned Kang, I have to Google, like, which one's Kang? Is he different than... He's different than the High Evolutionary.
Right, or the One Who Remains. Like,
or the Thinker.
Yeah.
The Mad Thinker, or the Wizard.
But I would totally watch a series of movies or a TV series of, you know, Jennifer Garner, Wesley Snipes, and Channing Tatum doing stuff, tooling around the multiverse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm down for anything that's the wild and goofy D-listers of the Marvel world. I'm all about that. You know, I'd love a Heroes for Hire series or something like that. But unfortunately, we're going to have to settle for X-Men: The Last Stand.
Yep.
Directed by Brett Ratner. So we're sorry, folks. Next week we are going to try to be measured in our extensive criticisms of X-Men: The Last Stand and X-Men: Apocalypse. Fortunately, or unfortunately, really, both the directors are incredibly problematic, so I don't have to necessarily mince my words.
Yeah, and I mean, those two movies are real bad, so...
Rough. They are rough movies. It's the two of the roughest X-Men movies out there, and that's saying something.
Yeah.
But fortunately, if you can make it through those with us, your reward on the other end is Logan, which is the best, least fun X-Men movie.
And I think the only one of these that has ever been nominated for a Screenwriting Academy Award. So
I mean, it might be the only superhero movie at all that's been nominated for a Screenwriting Academy Award. So it's something. That is a high watermark, not just for the X-Men, but for all superhero movies. It's not my favorite X-Men movie, but it is the best X-Men movie.
Yep. That's my feeling too.
But Will, thank you for introducing me to Deadpool all those years ago. He's always been a favorite.
I didn't even realize I was responsible.
You did that, you pusher. No, it's always been a ton of fun. He's one of my favorites, and I'm so happy that we got three Deadpool movies. That's crazy.
Yeah, and three good ones. I mean,
they're all really good, you know? Yeah. They're all fun, and this one was a lot of fun. I guess there's haters, but, you know, it's not everything's for everyone. Like the things you like. What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
Once again, we'll see you all next time around for a couple more X movies, and then we'll wrap things up with Logan, then we'll get back to the well.
All right.
Until then, Will, always a pleasure, always a delight.
Always.
All right.
Adios.
Bye, everybody.